Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. As we age, forestalling and even reversing bone loss becomes more and more important. That's why I've created the Intelligent Medicine Bone Health Protocol, my personal supplement recommendations to ensure your skeletal health. Just go to DearHoffmanStore.com. In addition to the Bone Health Protocol, you'll find easy-to-follow links from my Supplement Starter Kit, Heart Health Protocol, and much more. These new protocols are an easy way for you to get the exact combination of targeted supplements you need to help you follow the Intelligent Medicine lifestyle, and for a limited time, you'll get free shipping on all of your store orders. For more details, just go to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. We're talking to Albert Barrett, Managing Director of Inner Imaging here in Manhattan. He's an expert on EBT heart scanning. That's a way of providing early detection for coronary artery disease. Answering the questions that are so prevalent among certainly my patients and many patients, do I need to be on a statin? Well, I've been told I need to be on a statin. I need a second opinion. The EBT heart scan often provides an answer. And conversely, the question, I've been given a clean bill of health by my doctor, but is that really accurate? I'm concerned. I have a family history of heart disease. My doctor tells me I'm fine. Am I really fine? And this is an excellent test for providing discrimination between those who are at risk and those who are relatively not at risk. So continuing our discussion, one of the critiques of this test, and I got to bring this up, is that this is a test that detects what is called hard plaque or calcific plaque. And technically, it's possible to have plaque that is what's called soft plaque that doesn't show up on a calcium scan. So I guess another way of asking this question is, if you have a zero score, is it technically possible to have a heart attack anyway because you have some other form of blockage?
You know, that is a valid criticism. We call them one percenters because roughly 1%, some studies demonstrate 2% of the time, someone will have soft plaque that doesn't heal. And maybe this is an important time to identify plaque. It's a morphing process that begins as fatty streaks, which morphs into soft plaque, then morphing into fibrotic plaque, and then it finally heals as calcified plaque. It's a hard material, and in 99 or 98% of the population, the disease process does in fact heal, and we begin seeing it in men as early as age 30.
Mm-hmm.
Women a little bit there. So those one percenters, and we provide full disclosure in all of our materials that our accuracy is between 98 and 99%, and the variant is those patients that have soft plaque, and we are unable to see that. On the other hand, the only way to see that is with an invasive procedure, and that would be non-invasive angiography.
Mm-hmm. In other words, a cardiac catheterization.
Yes, or an injection of a iodine-based material.
Like an MRA, so-called.
Non-invasive angiography was a science that we invented and had the first license for. But today, there is a better software with the giants like GE and Philips. But it's not as well used. You're generally used if you have an equivocal or a failure with a nuclear study.
Mm-hmm.
It's now used because Bloomberg did a study last year, and it was 39% of those that went for cardiac caths were normals.
Hmm.
Now, that's an expensive procedure, so non-invasive angiography is sort of filled that void.
It's an expensive and very unpleasant and potentially dangerous procedure, too. I mean, usually it's fine, but, at least 1% complication rate. And if you're that 1%, you may have a cardiac arrhythmia, severe bleeding, or even a heart attack.
Anaphylactic shock, too.
Mm-hmm. Right. So the non-invasive is the way to go.
There are 1%ers that we can't identify, but we have kept as best track as we can. And in the last 17 years, we've identified 15 people that fell into that category that were here.
Mm-hmm. So it's very unusual to see that. And it can happen, admittedly, but it's unusual, and the predictive value of the tests remains. So the other critique that I've heard from some doctors is that the EBT heart scan doesn't characterize plaque as stable versus vulnerable. And by that, I mean you could have a plaque score of, say, 1,200 and, you know, live to be 105. And conversely, you could have a plaque score of 401 and have a heart attack tomorrow. Right? So the plaque score isn't, it indicates risk generally, but it doesn't tell you the type of plaque that you have, you know, whether it's stable, okay plaque that's not going to break loose or form a clot versus plaque that's sticky or unstable.
Well, that is an argument, and it is a valid argument. However, the difference between the stability of the plaque and the unstable plaque is a random event. So one can say that we have stable plaque and we have vulnerable plaque, but it's a random event. It's, you can say it, but that doesn't mean it's predictable.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, plaque is plaque, and it's statistically probable that the higher your plaque score is, the greater your risk. That's a fair
Definitely.
Statement. Okay.
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so another question that comes up is, I'm sorry, go ahead. Go ahead.
I collaborated with, this is a statement that we make to all of our patients, and I collaborated with John Rumberger, who is just one of the greats in prevention in this country. And we discussed the differences between plaques, vulnerability, and risk. So every patient that comes here gets an explanation. Because the first question they ask is, can you see the blockage? And that's almost a myth.
Mm-hmm.
What you really want to do is to identify the disease. Because if the majority of cardiac events occur in arteries that are less than 50% blocked, then you have to treat the disease.
Right. And
you need to know what the...
And you can identify those who are at risk with this test. As a practical matter, does insurance pay for the test?
Well, it does in five states. And in fact, in Texas, where the Bush family got behind this, and the Cooper Clinic, Ken Cooper, who's another important person in prevention, they were able to legislate a calcium score. If a patient wants it in the state of Texas, your insurer must pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
And there are four other states, Maryland being one, California, a western state, might be Colorado, and I don't remember the fifth. But yes, in those states, it's a covered service. Otherwise, this is, I would say most carriers are not interested in prevention.
Mm-hmm. Sadly.
Sadly is right, because this is an interesting statistic. For every 5,000 people we see, we save $30 million in healthcare costs.
Hmm.
So knowing how many public servants that we've seen here, we've saved Bloomberg under his administration north of $75 million in healthcare costs.
With the uniformed services of fire and police, correct?
That's right. Exactly right.
Yeah.
Finding disease early and managing it, we are preventing catastrophic events, and we lower disability claims about 38%.
Yeah, they're always interested in cost containment first and foremost. But then for an individual who wants to get this test, is the cost prohibitive?
Well, I don't think so. It's $250. That's a dinner.
Tell me about it. A dinner for two in Manhattan. Yeah.
For a life-saving experience, or potentially a life-saving experience. I'll give you an example. We screened 14,000 New York City police officers, all under the age of 50. And we hospitalized 700 for cancer, bypass, and stents. That's 7% of an organization under the age of 50.
Hmm.
What a surprise.
They
didn't see it coming.
That's a very high yield, indeed.
It is a high yield, and for the last 87 years, this is the number one cause of death in the United States. It beats out cancer and the next three diseases combined, which are diabetes, stroke, and high blood pressure.
So the other question is, do you need a prescription from your doctor to get the test, or can you just show up at Inner Imaging or a comparable place and get it electively?
The beauty of New York State, it's a self-referred state.
Okay.
So someone can call, make an appointment, and come in here for 15 minutes and get results same day.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a marvelous way of approaching medicine.
And that's very empowering, because I find it's really a teachable moment when you show someone their coronary arteries. They may be in a state of denial or ignorance about the situation, and it's a call to action. It means that they really need to get on the stick, because, you know, I guess some people have this aura of invincibility, and when they see the beginnings of plaque, it'll get them going. And conversely, it's something nice to take back to your doctor who's nudging you to go on a statin, and you can show them that, hey, doc, I've got zero plaque. I don't really need to go on a statin.
True enough. We probably, on a self-referred basis, we probably see five patients a day who call here looking for help. I've heard it from a neighbor. Neighbor was ill. Neighbor came in. And the neighbor was otherwise perfectly healthy, and we made a discovery.
Mm-hmm.
But it's an empowering moment, especially when a family member has passed away, or a friend, a colleague, has recently had a heart attack. Our telephones ring at those times. Those are moments of vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
They need help.
So another question that comes up is, you know, let's say you have a test result that shows, maybe you got a little bit of plaque going. Maybe you got a score in the teens. So that's not the lowest risk. That's a little bit of risk. And, you know, you try mightily to reduce the progression of coronary disease through a variety of means. It could be a statin. It could be, you know, a great diet, exercise program, stress reduction, certain supplements which are known to prevent cardiovascular disease. Should the test be repeated? Do you want to get a report card on this? Is it something that progresses very slowly? Is it worthwhile repeating? Because once you have it, you already have it.
Well, that's an excellent question, really. The progression of disease varies. It can grow 3 or 4% a year, or it can grow 40% a year. So our ability to predict heart attacks with this science is about 95%. So if someone's disease has a progression rate of 35 or 40%, the predictability of an infarct in the next 3 years is 95%.
Hmm.
It's very high. On the other hand, if someone has a disease that's growing at under 10% a year, and you can manage it at under 10% a year, you've really bought yourself 20 years.
And the other question is, you know, through various methods, lifestyle methods, something that we often use at the Hoffman Center, chelation therapy, is it possible to rinse away the calcium, you know, like Roto-Rooter, you know, clean out your arteries and come back with a clean bill of health after showing up plaque?
That is a very challenging question, because we discussed about 5 minutes ago vulnerable plaque versus stable plaque. So we know that calcified plaque tends to be stable.
Mm-hmm.
If you remove it, then you're left with vulnerable plaque. So the challenge in the community, the medical community, is it worth the risk?
Hmm.
I don't, and there is discussions today that statin therapy mineralizes soft plaque so that we have an acceleration of calcified plaque in the arteries.
Hmm.
That isn't natural. So that too is an argument. Is this progression of disease on its own valuable information, or are we being misled by the over-mineralization caused by statins? It's an unknown, really.
Or is the calcium a repair agent? Is it like spackle, you know, on a wall that's been damaged? You know, it's like sort of protects it.
It clearly is, because coronary artery disease is in fact an inflammation process. And from our shop, perhaps differently from others, we believe that an oxidation of the red blood cell is causal for that. So there is an inflammatory process that is going on, and that leads to an abrasion and the development of disease. So it's only in the healing process, and it's a remarkable process because it's healing underwater, isn't it? I mean, here we have a liquid environment in which an abrasion or a cut is being healed, and it's just remarkable that the human body could do that.
And not only underwater, but with the current going very, very rapidly, because the blood's coursing through those vessels at top speed. So it is pretty amazing. So if you go to YouTube and you put in the name Albert Barrett, it's spelled B-A-R-R-E-T-T-E, and Inner Imaging, I think you'll come up with a video that's really a nice, succinct video that's instructive on this subject. And in that video, you talk about five myths about cardiovascular disease that you seek to dispel. Can you run through some of those?
Well, certainly. Some of those myths are those that we are confronted with every day. And one of them is 68% of cardiac events occur in arteries that are less than 50% blocked. Two-thirds of heart attacks occur in patients with normal cholesterol.
Two-thirds, wow.
56% of patients who have normal thallium stress tests have significant disease. And family history, diabetes, the Framingham risk factors, which are six, sometimes seven, only predict cardiac events between 22% and 50%.
Wow.
So you think
those would be like family history, smoking, diabetes, hypertension, overweight, high cholesterol, the traditional risk factors.
Exactly. They predict cardiac events 22 to 50%. That's less than a flip of a coin. So it's turned into a myth that we are using a tool that was produced over 60 years and it cost $100 million during that period, and we have a tool that is dysfunctional. So those are the myths that we talk about, and the final one is blockage isn't necessarily the cause of a cardiac event; it's disease.
Indeed. And finally, sometimes you mentioned earlier that you pick up cancer when you screen people in this fashion. And I sometimes get information about the adjoining, you know, because when you take a picture of the heart, the lungs are adjoining, and sometimes it says, well, the heart's okay, but check this out. There's a little something here, and, you know, maybe we should do some further studies. Is that some additional payoff of this screening test?
It is. We're able to see one-third of the lung field. So we've been able to pick up thyroid cancers. We've picked up lung cancers. And we do some other screening here that's picked up in 11 different kinds of cancers. But in terms of just the heart, we've seen thyroid and lung cancers. But I'd like to introduce one aspect of this calcium score, Dr. Hoffman, that people may lose sight of because we talk about the negatives of this. So I said earlier that 47.8% of the people that come here score with a calcium score. But the flip side of that, which is 52%, score zeros. And our data, our 26 years of data, tells us that the probability of dying from natural causes over the next 10 years with a zero calcium score is 1%. Or a tenth of a percent a year. So while there's no assurance that this window is entirely valid. The data tells us that it is a very high probability that you're going to live 10 years.
Hmm. That's very reassuring. So bottom line, who should get the screening? I mean, should a, you know, an 18-year-old college athlete about to embark on a college athletic scholarship get the screening, or is there an age cutoff where men versus women should consider getting the screening?
Well, that's always a debate, and we're often challenged by various organizations. But for many years, we've used a guideline that was acceptable to physicians and our hospitals, and that is age 35. Mm-hmm. And the reason that we use age 35 is the need to treat. So when we look at the NTT, the need to treat, below that number, our discoveries are much smaller. Those patients over 35, the discoveries tend to be greater. So, for example, we saw 4,000 detectives. Their average age is 42, and our discovery was 29.9%. So 30% mm-hmm. of that age group, 42, had heart disease.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a discovery that the police department had no awareness of at all. So as we get older in age, by the time we reach age 50, roughly half of us have coronary artery disease. Worse than Minnesota and less than Los Angeles. But here in the Northeast, that's our number, roughly 50%.
Is it possible to screen an octogenarian or a nonagenarian and find virtually no plaque? Is that some people sort of bulletproof when it comes to cardiovascular disease?
We had a ballerina, age 79 years old, who had a zero calcium score.
Mm, okay. Good physical training and diet.
Yes. Definitely, we see octogenarians with zero calcium scores, yes.
Okay. So, that great discussion, great information. And, you know, as I say, I'm a real believer in the test. I use it clinically at the Hoffman Center, and I wish more doctors did. But it's there. It's available. What's today's Intelligent Medicine call to action? How can people find out more about the EBT heart scan test and inner imaging? And also bear in mind that some of our listeners are not in the New York region. We have listeners all over the country and all over the world, in fact.
If there were a call to action, and it's supported by this statement, so I'm going to give you the call to action in one moment. We fight about healthcare costs in this country, but 75 cents out of every dollar that we spend on healthcare is spent on coronary artery disease, diabetes, and obesity. So my call to action is find the coronary artery disease and have a glucose tolerance test to see if you're a diabetic, because that takes care of more than two-thirds of the cost that we spend on healthcare today.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a good compliment to this test. I find it very helpful.
Because if you have diabetes, you will end up having coronary artery disease. They are so linked at the hip. So those two discoveries, in our judgment, and we provide a glucose tolerance test for our police and fire through a cancer screening program that we develop for them. So heart disease and diabetes are key.
Mm-hmm. And so where can people get more information? Can they go? There's a website for inner imaging, correct?
We have a very easy website to follow, in part because we have so many civil servants and we built it around them. The radiation component that we talked about earlier, we have a slide there that we developed for the police department. It took us 4 months to configure, going back to Nagasaki, so it's full disclosure about that issue, and certainly about the early stages of disease and what our calcium score is about. So yes, go to our website. That's the easiest place to obtain information about us.
That would be innerimaging.com?
It's innerimagingnyc.com.
Okay. Well, I thank you very much for a very illuminating discussion, and I hope that it grabs some of our listeners and that they undertake the screening, because knowledge is power, and regardless of whether You subscribe to a medical paradigm that supports the use of bypasses and stents and statin medications. Being aware of your cardiovascular risk is very important, and you can tackle it in many ways, and lifestyle is the basis for cardiovascular prevention program. So this is just vital information. We want to get it out to folks.
Well, we certainly support that argument. And the earlier you find out that you have disease, the easier it is to manage it.
Indeed. Thank you so much, Albert Barrett.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having us on your show.
My pleasure. Managing Director of Inner Imaging here in Manhattan. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Thanks for joining us.